Welcome back here to X's and Bros on the Michigan Sports Network. Danica Halen, Ryan Elke, Anthony Bellino, all joining you. Joining us now on the Meijer Supercenter guest line, covering the Detroit Lions for the All Lions coverage on Sports Illustrated, our good friend Logan Lamarandeer. You can find him on Twitter at LLamarandeer. Logan, my friend, first and foremost, as always, thank you for taking the time to join us. Week one is officially in the books with a 41-33 opening loss to the San Francisco 49ers. But I really, walking away from that game on Sunday, I was really impressed with the fight that this team showed, the desire, the resiliency that they showed to at least make this a game. I know a lot of people are saying, you know, same old Lions, go down early, garbage time stats, blah, blah, blah. But I don't buy into that. Do you?
I mean, all offseason, Dan Campbell has preached about how gritty this team's going to be, and there's going to be no quit in this team. And, you know, when they were down, 28 points with 4 minutes left, something crazy like that, it was like, all right, where's this grit that Dan Campbell's been talking about? And then no one giving up. And sure enough, I could not believe it. I was literally just stunned when they had the ball in the last drive. I was like, the Lions literally have a chance right now, after thinking this was a blowout the whole second half, to actually be at least in the right, you know, in position to tie the game. Like, I just couldn't believe it. I was just, my mind was blown. I was like, how did this even happen? It was a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed it. I thought, you know, the game wasn't a great game, but at the end, it was super entertaining.
It really was, and I'd like to rewind all the way back to the first quarter. That's where I thought, you know, things really, just the Lions with a couple of opportunities they just couldn't take advantage of. They had that big fourth down conversion, which you felt really good about, and then they come up with no points there. San Francisco's first drive, what do? They, you know, the very first snap of the game, they punch a ball loose and it's a fumble. The Lions get the recovery and no points there. And it was like, oh my goodness. So nothing on the turnover on downs. They force a fumble. They miss a field goal. And to me, I mean, that's the difference in the ball game in the opening quarter.
Yeah, the missed opportunities, you can't have that happen, especially with this Lions team who, you know, as we saw, not a lot of explosive plays. They're going to have to take advantage of every single miscue that the opponents give them. The Lions just didn't on that fourth and one play to start the game. I mean, Jamal Williams flipping wasn't great, but I think that play probably would have been blown up anyways. And then, yeah, to get a gift, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo just fumbling the ball in the first snap, and the Lions get it, and they don't get any points off of that. That's when I kind of knew, you just felt like, all right, this game is not going their way, because those are points the Lions have to have in order to keep up with other teams, and they just couldn't do it. But at the end of the day, hey, it was a good game. There was a big period of time where it wasn't a ton going on for the Lions.
No, there really wasn't. If you look at the line from Jared Goff, 38-57, 338, three touchdowns, a pick. It was returned for a touchdown. He was sacked three times, lost 24 yards in that. He had a QBR of 24.8. That's not great. And a rating of 92.6. That's not ideal either. But if you look at it, TJ Hockenson, 8 catches. DeAndre Swift, 8 catches. Jamal Williams, 8 catches. You can even throw in Darren Fells with a grab there. It was like everything was primarily tight ends and running backs. And I just want to get your thoughts on, you know, how you felt the Jared Goff looked in his Detroit Lions debut.
Yeah, so there was a ton of checkdowns, a lot of short stuff, and we knew that going into it, that this offense, with the receiving core that they have, there's going to be a lot going through the tight ends and running backs, and that's exactly what happened. And I'm not upset about it. It's not as fun to watch as a deep passing attack and having those receivers that are just playmakers on the outside, but I do think that's the strength of the Lions team, is to utilize TJ Hockenson and their pass-catching backs that they have, and move the ball down the field. Now, Goff, I thought, I don't want to create too high of expectations for him. I didn't have high expectations for him just because what we saw the last 2 years, I feel like that's probably what he is. But you were just hoping that you would see some semblance of that 2018 Jared Goff, and we definitely didn't see that. I thought there was a lot of inaccurate passes, guys that were open that he missed, or just being off target, which is pretty uncharacteristic for Goff. If there's one thing that Goff does well, it's always been that if a guy's open, he can usually hit him. Now, he's not going to be great under pressure, and he's not going to thread the needle and have a bunch of tight window throws or anything like that. He's pretty conservative, but he's usually pretty accurate. And I thought his accuracy struggled, especially pushing the ball down the field whenever he tried to do that. But, you know, overall, it was just pretty meh, you know, from Jared Goff. And at the end of the day, his stat line looked fine, but that was also due to the Lions passing the ball a ton and having the most snaps on offense of any team in week one. So that's, you got to take it that into account as well.
Yeah, did I see somewhere that the Lions ran 91 offensive plays?
Yeah, it was just ridiculous. I think, I can't remember off the top of my head what it was, but I had to like double check it. And I was like, wait a minute, like how many plays they run? I'm like, this can't be right. And then I, you know, looked it up elsewhere. I'm like, yeah, that's what that's what's being reported. And then you kind of do the math of the pass attempts and the rushes. Like, yep, the offense was on the field a ton.
Yeah, it was pretty shocking. Logan Lamarandeer joining us right now, covering the Detroit Lions for Sports Illustrated's All Lions coverage. And Logan, when we look at the offensive line, Penei Sewell thrust into a matchup against Nick Bosa. I don't think very many people had their expectations too high, but he actually performed really well, so well that Nick Bosa even commented about his performance on Sunday, and it has many people thinking to themselves, now what do we do when Taylor Decker comes back? I, for one, happen to think that, yeah, you have two starting caliber left tackles. That's a really good problem to have. What did you make of Sewell's first start in the Honolulu blue and silver, and what should the Lions do moving forward?
Yeah, Sewell, man, he was really impressive, and he far exceeded my expectations, and I was very high in him in the draft. You know, he was my second top prospect in the draft. I just thought, you know, he was one of those can't-miss guys, and then the preseason came along, and he did. He looked uncomfortable on the right side, and then Taylor Decker has that finger surgery, and all of a sudden they just swap him right back to the left side. I'm like, well, this is a recipe for disaster, especially going up against, you know, Bosa. It's like, how is he going to do in this? And I was just super impressed with what he did against Bosa. And there were so many plays where he just took Bosa out of the equation. And give Bosa credit, too. There was definitely some plays that he won against Sewell. But, you know, come on. Like, look who Sewell's going up against. And the youngest left tackle to ever start a game. And he's just put in a pretty difficult spot. And he held his own. So I was very happy with just how that all unfolded, and hope that continues. And you have to start questioning, well, it's like, well, should we, the Lions, move him back to the right side if he's struggling there and he's excelling on the left side? Because Taylor Decker's already there. He's got a big contract. He's here for a few more years under contract through 2024, I believe. And so if you have two left tackles, one of them has to be to the right. And I know Sewell even himself said he's going back to the right side once Decker comes back. But to me, yeah, both of these guys are cornerstones to this organization moving forward. But at the same time, when you have a 20-year-old left tackle, he's going to be the guy for a long time. At least that's the plan. And Decker, he's still, you know, in his prime, but he's not young by any means either. So to me, I just think Sewell, if he's playing that well on the left side, he could stay there, and it should be Decker who's moving over to the right side, because Decker is going to be around for, you know, 3 or 4 more years, and Sewell, the plan is for him to be around a long time. And if he's a left tackle, he should be there. And I know everyone keeps mentioning the contract that Taylor Decker got. He'd be too pricey for a right tackle. Well, there's other right tackles that are making more money than he is, and it's just going to be a wash anyway. They're still paying these guys the same thing, no matter where they line up. So it's either you have an average left tackle in terms of contract and an average price right tackle, or you swap Sewell to the left side and put Decker to the right, and you're looking at a really cheap left tackle and an expensive right tackle. I don't know why the contract necessarily makes much of a difference. So to me, I think you just got to play your best guys where they should be. And yet this year, especially, you have to keep in mind what the future of this team is going to look like. And if that's going to be Sewell on the left side, now is the time to move Taylor Decker to the right side if you're going to do it, because this is the year where, you know, expectations aren't incredibly high or anything like that in this first year of a rebuild.
You know, Logan, I think that if they do end up keeping Penei at the left tackle spot, and they want to move Taylor Decker, and he's good with that. Now, he mentioned about, I forget what the term is. I mentioned it yesterday, but the, you know, basically his muscles being disproportionate left to right side of his body. But, you know, hey, Taylor Decker's been around the league. He is a professional. It seems to me like you just kind of got to buckle down and do what is asked of you. It also makes me wonder, you know, do they flip Jonah Jackson to the right guard spot? Is Hal Vitae, is he a viable option at right tackle? And would you put Panay Sewell and Taylor Decker next to each other at left guard and left tackle?
Yeah, I mean, it's on paper it looks great, but we just don't know what Decker would be as a guard. If it, you know, maybe he would feel more comfortable as a left guard as opposed to the right tackle. But I mean, even Penny Sewell, you know, he's probably not too happy. He's going to say all the right things, but he's probably not thrilled about being a right tackle. You know, there's going to be someone who's not going to be super happy about it. But I think Decker and Sewell are both team players, and wherever the Lions coaches want them to play, I think that's, you know, both Decker and Sewell will be okay with it. So it's just one of those things where, you know, Dan Campbell's going to have to, and Brad Holmes is going to have to kind of test the waters a little bit, maybe to see the response they get to Decker possibly moving to the right side. And, you know, it's going to be a learning curve for Decker too, but it's a learning curve for Penny Sewell. So it's just kind of one of those things where you got to do what's best for your team long-term. And if Decker doesn't, you know, for whatever reason, if they were to move him to the right side, he just couldn't, you know, get his muscle memory down enough to where he's good. And then, you know, maybe next year, after next year, it's time to trade him. I don't like even talking about that because I think Decker needs to be in the long-term plans. But if you have two guys who are excelling on the left side and neither of them, for whatever reason, aren't good on the right side, you know, you got a little bit of a problem. And it's just, I think Decker could get back a nice, you know, something in return for a trade. But that's a ways down the line if that were to even to happen. But at the end of the day, there's going to be one of those guys is probably not going to be super happy or super thrilled to be on the right side, but that's what's best for the team.
What did you make of the defensive performance? Because if you think about it, you take the 7 points off the board from San Francisco on their pick six. You know, defense has no control over something like that, but they still surrendered 34 points outside of that. I really liked what we saw from Tracy Walker. It felt like Tracy Walker of old. The guy felt like he was flying around the field, making plays, getting after it a little bit behind the line of scrimmage as well. What did you make of the defense and what you saw in the new scheme and how this team played against a very good San Francisco offense? That Raheem Mostert going to an injured reserve, that's not a good look for them. But when you look at, you know, Elijah Mitchell was right there. He had 19 carries for 104 yards. Debo Samuel was eating 9 catches, 189 yards and a score. George Kittle's always going to cause problems for everybody because he's such a gifted and talented and just a workhorse of a tight end. What did you make of the Lions defense in week one?
Honestly, I was pretty disappointed. I thought they would show a little better than they did, and I know that the Lions defense is lacking the high-end talent, and there's a lot of good players, but there's also mixed in with, you know, some journeyman, Alex Anzalone, you know, not to call anyone out, but he was pretty bad, you know, and I just wanted more from the linebackers. The secondary, though, Amani Arawarie did not look great, you know, allowed quite a few catches, and then Jeff Okuda, who, you know, actually, I didn't think he had a bad game by any means. I think it was an improvement from last year. He just gave up that touchdown, really. That was the big play. And it's not because he was in bad position. It was more so just, you know, he couldn't turn his head around, which with where he was at on the field, he literally would have had to turn his head completely backwards to find the ball. And he tried to play Debo Samuel's hands, and Debo made him pay for it. And then Will Harris, the angle on that play, on that long Samuel touchdown, was just, it was not great. So there was just a lot of, it looked like a young defense for sure in certain spots. But yeah, the secondary, it's still very much a work in progress, and the linebackers work in progress. The defensive line, I thought, did okay. And the pass rush could never really do all that much because it's not like the 49ers were ever in passing downs. You couldn't ever see the defensive front really pin their ear back and get after the quarterback. So overall, it was pretty ugly, I'll have to say.
Oh, but you said it with a smile, right? And that's what counts, yeah. Logan. That's what counts, Logan Lamar and Deer joining us. Jeff Okuda, you mentioned it. You know, this is a guy that a lot of Detroit fans have kind of targeted because of his draft position. A lot of people don't like the fact that the Lions took him at number 3 overall. and he suffers an Achilles injury. And this was a guy that I think a lot of, not only the fans, but also the coaching staff, most importantly in the front office, trying to evaluate what they have with Jeff Okudah. This was going to be a really big year for him in his development and for the organization to see what they have there with him. He tears his Achilles. Not a good situation for Okudah, who just seems like kind of a pinata at this point.
Yeah, it's really the worst case scenario for him, because if this year you definitely wanted to see the Lions' younger players develop. That's always been my mindset going into this year. It's like, let's see what some younger players we have to build around going forward. And Okudah was towards the top of that list. And carrying Achilles, I mean, modern medicine has come a long ways, but Achilles are still very difficult to come back from, you know, depending the type of tear and how severe it is and all that. But, you know, Okudah, it's never like he was the fastest guy to begin with. And to have an Achilles tear, it's like if he loses any speed, it's going to be even, you know, that speed element of his game, the lack thereof, it's going to just be compounded when he's trying to work back from an Achilles. So it's going to be a tough road for him. And, yeah, there's already going to be the bust label on him by a lot of people. I'm not going to do that. Yeah, he had a very bad year last year, but this year, you know, reports coming out of camp is he's having a strong camp. And like I already mentioned, I don't think he had a bad game by any means outside of that one play, which kind of skewed everyone's view of how his game went. And yeah, you don't want that to happen, but it's just, I feel horrible for him. I feel horrible for the Lions because they really needed him to step up and be a leader. And he can still be a leader from the sidelines, but he just needed more experience, and I that's not going to happen this year. And it kind of just leads you to wonder, you know, what's he going to be next year? And is it basically going to be a write-off year because he's coming back from a serious injury where you can't truly evaluate what he is? And at that point, after next year, he'd be going into his fourth year, and you still don't know what you have in him. So it's just kind of tough because you start wondering, it's like, well, is the cornerback spot just going to be another position on the board where that's considered a need now? And that's tough to say after you drafted a quarterback in the top three just last year.
Maybe the most important question I can ask you, Logan, with the game coming up this week on the road in Green Bay. You know what that means? It's time for Monday Night Football. Will you be watching the standard ESPN call or Monday Night with the Mannings, Manning Night Football?
I'll definitely be watching the Manning.
My man! See, I knew I loved you. I'm doing the same thing. Without a doubt, without question, without hesitation. Give me the Manning cast right now.
Oh, yeah. It was great. Just hearing, you know, Peyton Manning, obviously a very cerebral quarterback. Eli Manning is as well. But, you know, I felt like Peyton was always on another level. But just to hear their thought process on everything and not going through all the obligatory, you know, unnecessary things that the standard broadcast gives you, whereas I feel like Peyton and Eli, you know, throw some fun in there, but they're also everything. I just wanted to listen to everything they said, so I'm really looking forward to how they're breaking down some of what's going on with the Lions next week.
He's Logan Lamarandier. We have so many sound effects happening right now. It's incredible. Logan, he's watching Manning Night Football Monday night. The Lions on the road in Lambeau Field against the Green Bay Packers. Logan, my man, appreciate the time today as always. Thank you. Have a great week and enjoy the game on Monday night.
No, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate it. Looking forward to next week.